Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, May 27th, 2006, the beginning of the Memorial Day weekend. I'm Harley Schlanger. I'm your host today. In less than 2 weeks, on June 9th, Lyndon LaRouche is going to hold the next in the series of webcasts in Washington, D.C. It will be available on the LaRouche PAC website at 1 p.m. That same day, the World Cup soccer championships are going to begin in Germany. This week, Mr. LaRouche issued a terror alert of the danger of a terror attack at the World Cup soccer championships. LaRouche further warned that an increasingly desperate Vice President Dick Cheney, who has become a central focus of Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald's investigation into the Valerie Plame leak, that Cheney must be removed so he cannot use a terror strike to orchestrate a war against Iran. Now, we tried to get Vice President Cheney on the LaRouche Show today to answer some of these charges, but he's either in a bunker at an undisclosed location or out shooting someone. My guest today said maybe he was the cause of the shots fired or allegedly fired in the Rayburn House office building yesterday, but we can't confirm that. But we do have with us today Michelle Steinberg to discuss Mr. LaRouche's warnings and the mobilization internationally for emergency legislation at the point of the disintegration of the financial system. Michelle is a counterintelligence editor of the Executive Intelligence Review, a longtime collaborator of Lyndon LaRouche, and she was formerly one of the co-hosts of The LaRouche Show. We'll also be joined today by a panel of members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, including Timothy Vance from Washington, D.C., Kurt Beil in Houston, and Michelle Fuchs in Seattle. And they'll be reporting on the organizing for the webcast, and they'll also participate in the roundtable discussion we have in the second half hour. So to begin with, let me welcome Michelle Steinberg to the LaRouche Show.
Hi, Harley. Great to be here.
Now, Michelle, what is the essence of the warning from Lyndon LaRouche that he put out a statement on May 24th warning of Cheney plans to launch an Iran strike in June? Tell us what this is about.
Well, our whole international organization, Harley, has been on a full mobilization since Tuesday of this week concerning exactly this warning for the purposes of stopping a phony terrorist attack in Europe, where all of the pieces, according to European security experts who are friends of Executive Intelligence Review and Mr. LaRouche, there is a prime situation for there to be a terrorist incident around the onset of the World Cup soccer matches that begin on June 9th, as you said. And the information that we've pieced together that shows that the confluence of these games, where you have a phenomenon of millions of soccer fans, many of whom are organized in clubs, which are actually clubs that are a cover for neo-Nazi political groups involving the National Democratic Party in Germany and Italian forces like Terza Posizione of Roberto Fiore, which is that's the third position. Literally, you have neo-Nazi gangs that are going to be using the soccer matches for violence.
These include the infamous British hooligans who appear to be covers for these kinds of special operations.
Correct. And what LaRouche has said is, and I'm going to quote him here, "I know the desperate state of mind among George Shultz, Felix Rohatyn, Dick Cheney circles in Washington. I know, as do others, that they are seeking the first pretext for a preventive, unwarranted strike against Iran. The confluence of events in June represents the kind of opportunity that I fear they will not be willing to pass up. Therefore, I would be remiss were I not to speak out publicly at this moment, warning that these madmen may be contemplating actions that would throw the entire planet into chaos and conflict. Let me be blunt, LaRouche said, perhaps to the point of ruffling some Capitol Hill feathers. There is not a government in the world today, including Iran, that has any interest in disrupting the World Cup soccer tournament in Germany, though some kind of asymmetric warfare action may take place. However, outside of government, there's a fifth column apparatus known as the Synarchist International, associated with the financing of the interwar, that is, between World War I and World War II, and World War II-era fascist regimes, which has both the capacity and intent to carry out precisely such a terrorist disruption of the World Cup. Now, we've been tracking these terrorist gangs in Ibero-America, Argentina, Mexico, Spain, of course, where the leaders of these Nazi gangs are former officials in the fascist regime of Francisco Franco. And then, of course, in Italy, you have the heirs, literally the heirs, the granddaughter of Benito Mussolini. And these Nazi gangs, however, are not a close-to-the-ground phenomenon. This is an apparatus which is controlled by bankers. And this is where you get the Schultz-Cheney-Rohatyn intersection. These banking forces know that the hyperinflation of commodities, the shock we saw this week of the precipitous plunge, the drop, the catastrophe on the various stock markets. For example, in one day this week, the Russian stock market fell 9%. It would have been the equivalent of a 1,000-point drop in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. 1,000 points. That would have caused utter panic.
Well, and the price of gold fell $35 overnight this last week. So we're seeing an unprecedented series of wild gyrations. First, for 4 weeks, just skyrocketing, and then this last week, the collapse. So what LaRouche is saying is that this is creating a situation that would cause these bankers to launch a strike. How does that work?
Well, empire. The issue is empire. These figures that I've mentioned, Schultz, Rohatyn, Cheney, they don't believe in the United States of America as a sovereign republic. They want to go back, as was said in a conference that Felix Rohatyn sponsored up at Middlebury College. They want to go back to the model of the British East India Company and basically feudalism, where it's the financial interests that control political affairs and tell governments what to do, not vice versa. And that's the essence of empire. Now, part of this empire faction is that they want to continue the series of preventive wars, not preemptive wars. George Shultz and company just held two big conferences, one at the Hoover Institute in California, the other at Princeton University, over the last year. Condoleezza Rice participated in this, so forget of thinking of her as a sane force in administration. She is Schultz's political baby and very, very dangerous thinker here. And the preventive war, the next preventive war on the agenda of these neo-imperialists is Iran. But there's too many obstacles, including the military of the United States, who are saying enough is enough. We're not going to let you do it this time. So by provoking a phony terrorist incident in Europe around these games, blame it on Iran, you have the pretext for what I think you look in history at the Reichstag fire.
Now, Michelle, one of the things we were discussing this week is that it may not be so clear to Americans, but the World Cup soccer championships are much bigger than the Super Bowl. They're close to 1.5 to 2 billion people at any point in time who are watching this. So an event there would not only be used to overcome opposition in the U.S. military, but possibly other countries that might be unwilling to allow just a straight-out U.S. strike, something at the World Cup takes on a higher symbolic meaning.
Absolutely. Let me add one other thing on this, which I know people have questioned about. Cheney is in such trouble on the investigation of the leaking of the identity of a covert CIA agent, Valerie Plame Wilson. In a series of filings by Special Prosecutor, Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald, you have had a very strong argument made by Fitzgerald that it is Cheney's covering up for Cheney's fury, his absolute rage against Ambassador Joe Wilson for having gone public saying the White House knew the Niger yellow cake story was false. Absolute rage at this, now proven by Dick Cheney's handwritten notes on a New York Times article by Wilson from July 2003. Picture this, Dick Cheney sitting at his little desk, taking out his little penknife and cutting out very carefully this article and then underlining all the parts he doesn't like and then writing various notes.
Sort of sounds like one of the bad guys in a Dirty Harry movie.
Really, it does sound like the villain in a Superman comic book. But he's the Vice President of the United States. We've already had one preventive war, and the other one's on the agenda.
Now, Michelle, also, I think to complete the picture, we have a report of three American and one French naval aircraft carrier groups that will be in the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf by sometime in June. Have there been warnings that you've talked to people, military intelligence networks? Are they sending out the word that something should be done to stop this?
There has not been a specific call for not sending the carrier groups into the area, and I don't think it would take that form. But what we have had is retired military people warning that there's no reason for that many carriers to be in position unless action is planned. And looking at Cheney's state of mind and the absolute determination by this administration to have a war against Islam and a continuing anti-Islam war for oil type of neo-physiocratic empire push, they really believe that the Cheney faction inside this administration is so desperate that they're going to go ahead and launch, because this is their only way of reversing, which is becoming a an absolute catastrophe for them in terms of losing the support of the population completely.
Now, you're listening to Michelle Steinberg. This is The LaRouche Show. It's the 27th of May, 2006. The LaRouche Show is live on the web every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And I want to give an email address so you can send in your questions. We've already had a question emailed to us on this question of Cheney's state of mind from Stephanie Fryer from Chicago. But you can send us an email at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. Now, I'm trying to get this up on my screen. Okay, here we go. Stephanie asked, she'd like to thank us for the work we've been doing on the show. Well, we're happy to get that kind of comment. And she wants to know about the state of mind of Vice President Cheney, which you just referred to. Probably she said that it's clear to her that with the Fitzgerald possible indictment against Cheney, and I'd like to ask you about that. But she just does, and she sent this yesterday. Is it possible that Cheney would stage riots during the World Cup tournaments? Now, how believable is that to the people you're talking to, Michelle? Is there a recognition that in fact the vice president is in the kind of state of mind, a murderous state of mind, where he would do something like that?
Absolutely. This is very, very clear. It's the kind of thing that is thought all the time and said very rarely. And that gets to the point of Lyndon LaRouche's courage, Because many times, Harley, you probably get the same thing, is people say the important thing about Lyndon LaRouche is he says what everybody else is thinking and is afraid to say. Which is why Lyndon LaRouche came out and issued this release. He has been in Europe doing a series of meetings and public and private events. And this was brought to his attention because there's going to be 14 German cities that are literally flooded with millions of soccer fans for an entire month. And there's going to be 64 matches. And one of the wild cards thrown into the mix is that President Ahmadinejad of Iran has indicated he wants to go see his national Iranian soccer team play. So what you've had is the neo-Nazi gangs have already held several meetings to say that they're going to go out in force to support Ahmadinejad because they call him an anti-Semite because of some of the remarks he has made about Israel, and therefore, they're going to make a big spectacle of this and use it as an opportunity to go ahead and carry out some riotous operations. They already did this, I think it was in 2004, around the time of the Madrid train bombing, which was a very, very big affair. They also staged riots during the soccer matches in Italy, in which 171 people were injured. But even more than that, there's a very big history of the neo-Nazi synarchist-controlled right wing in Italy and throughout Europe carrying out major terrorist actions. And let me say at this moment, next week's edition of Executive Intelligence Review is going to contain two absolutely essential exposés that address this issue. The first is a package LaRouche warns of Cheney plans to launch Iran strike in June, which is backed up by an article from Italy, by our correspondent, our EIR correspondent in Europe, Claudio Celani, who goes through the history of these gangs and their record of terrorism. People may remember us writing about the Bologna train station bombing done by right-wing terrorist groups. I think it was 80 to 100 people were killed in that carnage.
This was under the Operation Gladio.
Operation Gladio, which was the European companion to the notorious Operation Condor death squads in Ibero-America.
Which in both cases you have the connection of Schultz and Roatan, because Schultz and Roatan were together in the Chile Pinochet coup, and it's Roatan's old firm, Lazard Frere, which has a history of supporting fascist gangs and terror going back to the launching of the Hitler Project in the 1920s.
Exactly. And I did want to say a little bit more about that, but let me just finish up on the EIR that
sure.
Listeners can request a copy of that EIR. Isn't that right, Harley?
Yeah, that's right. They can call us at 888-347-3258. We'll give out the number as we go on. But this issue of the EIR will be absolutely critical for anybody who's concerned not just with stopping terrorism, but straightening out the country. Michelle, I have a few more questions for you, but there's something that we just got as a question, which is interesting in that sometimes we go ahead of ourselves in that there are people listening who aren't quite sure of some of the terms that are used. We have from a listener in France, Bertrand Buisson, who asks, what is a fifth column?
Well, a fifth column is politically what we know from Grimm's fairy tales to be a wolf in sheep's clothing. And if that metaphor doesn't do it for you, let me explain. Basically, a fifth column politically is a political operation inside your own body politic that is working to undermine and defeat the Republican issues in our country. So you have in this country the neoconservatives are definitely an enemy within a fifth column who, when you're trying to defend the national security and the national interests, you have these elements who actually are able to sabotage what they're doing. And the synarchist fifth column inside the United States, they're the ones that are always screaming the loudest about national security at the same time they are sabotaging national security and making us weaker. What's the fundamental weakness of the United States? We're losing our industrial base, our machine tool capability. We are losing our ability to survive as a nation. And that is, for example, the Schultz crowd. They built up Osama bin Laden. And it was open at that point. They built up the entire radical Islamist Mujahideen army. They armed them. They trained them. They let them run opium to finance their operations. And in that sense, it was an apparatus that could be triggered at a given time. So the people who really should be taken to task in the war against terrorism are Kissinger, Brzezinski, Schultz, Roatan, and Dick Cheney. Then we'll have a safer world. So that's what the fifth column idea is.
And those people you just named are a fifth column in the human race.
Definitely.
Well, we have more time for emails. You can send them to radio@larouchepub.com. I'd like to bring in Timothy Vance right now, who's in Washington, D.C. We have several initiatives going. On the one hand, we have the emergency auto legislation where we're doing meetings with congressional offices. At the same time, we've been getting out these warnings of the terror threat. And we have the webcast coming up on June 9th. So, Tim, why don't you give us a sense of what the LaRouche Youth Movement is doing in Washington, D.C. right now?
Yeah, sure, Harley. Thanks for having me on. I'll be brief, but in terms of organizing for the webcast, of course, we've been holding these pretty regularly, and they've become an institution of sorts. So they're well known, and some of our personal contacts of the LIM in Congress, of course, know about them and often regret when they're not able to come. And what's interesting about D.C. is if you just go out there and invite every single person you manage to stop on the street, you're bound to invite, statistically speaking, just an interesting strata of the population where you know, you can discuss ideas and then the people you meet are actually in a position to implement them. So that's what I would say in regards to the webcast. When it comes to the auto legislation, I kind of want to use a soccer analogy in honor of the upcoming World Cup series. The way I look at the D.C. operations, I see it as providing the assist, directing the ball to center field where the bulk of our national mobilization is able to put it in the net with overwhelming force.
That's what you get from someone who went to the University of Texas. Soccer analogy. Go ahead, Tim.
I think that's good. That's
yeah,
good.
It is.
Well, I mean, one thing that can be disconcerting if you're new to D.C. Or you're unfamiliar with the way politics works within the Beltway is that the attitude and behavior on the surface coming from these people who supposedly represent leadership, it's very disconnected from the reality of the strategic situation. Obviously, what you know LaRouche is pinpointing and what the both of you have just detailed. But I mean that really is politics within the Washington Beltway, and it shouldn't be a standard for much of anything in determining. You know, what I would say is it's useful to reinforce the reality, which is how important we are, and it only serves to, you know, remind us of the responsibility that we have in seeing to it that that we do the work necessary to get them to just finish it off in terms of passing the legislation.
Well, Tim, you were not in Washington at all last year during 2005, where there was a response to LaRouche, particularly around the Social Security issue. And as Mr. LaRouche has been pointing out, as soon as we got into 2006, there was a running away from reality with people focused on the congressional representatives focused on the elections in November and getting money and pretty much running away from reality. Are we finding from the staffs, the legislative aides and others, a recognition of this problem, the difference between running for office and actually serving the constituents?
They definitely know what we're talking about when we bring it up, but of course they don't like to openly discuss it.
And the other question I have for you is that we have LaRouche Youth Movement deployments all over the country. We have listeners to this show all over the country. If they're mobilizing in their districts, is there a recognition of that in the offices in Washington?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is the best responses we've had from these congressional offices and the staffers have always been either from the particular regions where we have a strong presence, or individuals in other offices who have in indirect ways come across our national presence, where they're honestly provoked by the influence of LaRouche and how we're able to do what we do, when obviously you can't put what we do as a movement into their framework of thinking. I mean, this is the beauty of what we do, is that we're able to go out there and say exactly what is on the minds of these people. But just given the oppressive nature of the bureaucracy, they're not allowed to say.
And Michelle, you do meetings with congressional offices at times. Are you seeing a heightening of awareness of the depth of the crisis?
I would say yes. And as Tim mentioned, a lot of people in Washington are really trained not to respond to reality, to keep their cool, if you will. And it's a persona. Deep inside, they're human beings, and they know what's going on. And if they know their district has 3 or 4 plants, that there's going to be 5,000 to 6,000 people without jobs over the next 2 years. How can they ignore that? It's the essence of politics if you really believe in this Constitution, which some people do. You cut through the persona and get to the point of the sublime, which leaders like Franklin Roosevelt, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, two out of those three literally gave their lives trying to fight for economic justice.
Michelle, we'll have to come back to that in just a moment because we have to take our break. This is the LaRouche Show. This is Saturday, May 27, 2006. We're discussing with Michelle Steinberg and a panel of LaRouche Youth Movement members the danger of a terror strike taking place or being organized to take place in Germany at the World Cup soccer matches to give Cheney his excuse to go to war with Iran. You can get the EIR by calling us at 888-347-3258. If you're not subscribing yet, you ought to ask yourself, why not? Don't be the last one on your block to figure these things out. Also, you can hear the LaRouche Show every Saturday. We're live on the web from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, but we are also available through our archives on the LaRouchePub.com website, where we have archives going back almost 4 years, I think, maybe 5 years. Now, let me remind you again also of Lyndon LaRouche's webcast coming up on June 9th. It will be 1 p.m. Eastern Time, June 9th. That's just less than 2 weeks from now, Friday the 9th, and that will be available on LaRouchePAC.com. Also, by calling the number I gave you, you can get copies of the U.S. Economic Recovery Act of 2006, which we've been discussing, the plan to retool auto and go back to a Franklin Roosevelt economic policy. Now, Michelle, before I get back to you on a couple of things, I'd like to bring our other two panelists in. First, from Houston, Kurt Beil, who's been organizing for the Keisha Rogers for state chairman campaign in the Texas Democratic Party. Kurt, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Harley?
Fine. So why don't you give us a quick report on what's going on with Keisha's campaign?
Sure. Things are really exciting right now in Texas. I think the simplest way to describe the situation is that there's a lot of potential here, a real possibility to transform Texas back into a bastion of the Democratic Party. What we're finding among the population here is increasingly over the last year a real responsiveness to the idea of saving General Motors, really retooling the automobile industry to produce major infrastructure projects, but also around the idea in general of bringing back industry, bringing back decent jobs. What's been really unique about Keisha's campaign and the events that we've been attending is that we knew from the population through our organizing on the streets that there was this real ferment, a real yearning to get a Democratic Party that would stand up again and fight for the people. But what we found through the events we've attended is that people within the party itself are tired with the business-as-usual approach. They're looking at, new ideas, a way that we can actually get the Democratic Party to be a fighting force again. And through these events we've gone to, there's been that kind of a response, a positive response to Keisha's campaign and to the kind of ideas that we're promoting. But at the same time, there's been from candidates that are running for office right now, there's been a kind of a disconnect from reality. They recognize that there are problems, but what we're trying to do is get them to really address the fact that there's an economic collapse going on right now and getting them to really take concrete action to make sure that we save this capacity around General Motors and that we have a successful campaign in November. Because one thing that we've noticed is that a lot of these Democratic guys running for office are counting on the Republican Party not turning out sufficiently. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously not a strategy for victory.
No, that's been a strategy for defeat after defeat. Kurt, let me just ask you another question. June 9th, in addition to being the day of LaRouche's webcast and the beginning of the World Cup soccer championships, that's also the day that Tom DeLay will be leaving the Congress. And I know you were involved in the campaign here in Houston's 22nd District to bring down Tom DeLay. Any thoughts on that?
Well, this is something that, especially here in Houston, we fought for a long time. It's significant. The guy who's Mr. Nick Lamson, who's running for Tom DeLay's seat, he's a good guy. He's got ideas, but he is one individual in particular that we really need to organize to effectively deal to address these economic problems.
So you're going to take Nick Lamson under your wing with Keisha and the Limb down in Houston?
Yeah, I think we're all going to take him under our wings.
Great.
All right, now let's go to Michelle Fuchs in Seattle. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Harley.
So what's going on up in the Great Northwest Ecotopia?
In the Great Northwest, we're figuring out how to take advantage of a continued presence that we've had in this area, where the population's smaller. So we're finding more and more that the people that we meet on the street have not only seen us a few dozen, maybe 50 times, if they're around the areas that we organize in, but also in a lot of cases have spoken with us, are actually coming up to the table recently, pointing out various pieces of our literature, explaining what they know about what they've read. From, this pamphlet, oh, that one's on Roatan, not quite sure who he is. Okay, this one, oh, I read that one. So what we're doing to try to take over institutionally to be able to communicate to the population that something is moving is dividing up how we're targeting the area, where we have a group focusing on unions, on developing contact that we've had with labor leaders, machinists, trying to give them a sense of the solutions that we can have, the importance of using what we have in this area here in terms of taking the aerospace and retooling it specifically for the maglev, the body of the maglev, or for reenacting a space program to get beyond a disconnect that people in this area would have with the auto sector. We're also calling through state legislatures, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Idaho, and with a similar deal with the disconnect with the rest of the country, trying to reel them in, such as when we're calling Alaska, they're having an emergency session about an oil pipeline. And our representatives there at the Alaska Democratic Convention were trying to communicate to the legislators there, you're not going to be able to build the pipeline if the auto sector collapses. So we're also looking at increasing a presence among the legislative districts, the county chairs, and finding that the LaRouche freakout's not an issue. People are actually looking for solutions.
Now, Michelle, do you think there's still people up there who think that you can run an economy on Microsoft and Starbucks?
Sure. Yeah, that's why we've actually geared our youth intellectual work towards developing the difference between an input-output look at energy into looking at the energy density in something like nuclear, into looking at, case studies of Illinois and Mississippi water systems to give people a better sense of how that works when you don't let things like locks and dams break down.
Well, Michelle Steinberg and I go back long enough that we can probably remember when one of Lynn's leading pedagogical issues was looking at the worldwide cup of coffee. So maybe we can set up outside of Starbucks and educate people on that. Well, let's get back to the question of Cheney now with Michelle Steinberg. It is clear from the work that we're doing and the material that's coming out that Cheney has become a focus of Fitzgerald's investigation. I believe the EIR is also going to be printing some of that material in the next issue, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. This has been so covered up by the establishment media. You have to spend hours blogging on the web to find reference to what is very, very clearly out in the open right now, that it was Dick Cheney who called his chief aide, his chief of staff, his national security advisor, Louis Libby, and began to hound him. And this is all documented in three filings, actually four filings, by Fitzgerald, which we're going to include in their complete documentary form in the next EIR. But Cheney was hounding his people in the White House about destroying Joe Wilson. Not so many words, but I can tell you right now what the words are. I am looking at the facsimile of the New York Times op-ed and Dick Cheney's tiny little obsessively fixated handwriting. So this is the op-ed by Joe Wilson, July 6th, 2003, called What I Didn't Find in Africa. There was no Niger-Iraq uranium deal. And Wilson says, I'm the ambassador who went to Niger to check out whether or not Saddam Hussein was buying uranium for WMD, which we all know now there are no WMD. There were none when we did the invasion in 2003. And anybody who wanted to know could have known that beforehand.
So this is, and I don't mean to diminish the terrible unveiling or outing of Valerie Plame, the wife of Joe Wilson, and to say that that wasn't important. Because obviously, if CIA agents undercover can be outed by a vice president or a president,
that's a death warrant, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly, not just for them, but the networks that they
exactly
develop. But what Fitzgerald is bringing up is that it goes beyond that, because we're actually looking at the lying behind the whole Iraq war. Is that not true?
Yeah, that's become the issue, which is completely freaking out Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, and the whole White House apparatus, and the Republican Party.
And, Michelle, we do have another email from James Calvert, who asks, again, you covered this earlier, but why are we fighting these wars? Is it merely to control Central Asia?
Well, James, let me refer you to this issue that I mentioned in terms of Mr. LaRouche's writing in the next issue of EIR. He answers that question in a very thorough way with the backup documentation. But I would also add, it's not just Central Asia. You've got two things going on. You have a faction which is totally committed to war, empire, on the basis of sophistry. And what LaRouche does is he turns to the collapse of Athens, which was warned about by the great leader of Athens, the author of their constitution, Solon, who said Athens could only be destroyed from within. Same thing for the United States Republic. It can be destroyed, but it must be destroyed from within. And what Mr. LaRouche goes through is the mentality of this empire faction going back, and he was very insistent on this. We've had to brief all of our contacts in the military, in the intelligence community, in Congress, and so forth, the lessons of the Peloponnesian Wars. Read, I remember you had Harley Jerry Rose
right.
on the show, and he quoted from Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers. Mm-hmm. That blew me away.
Yeah.
To realize that young Alexander Hamilton, another one of Ben Franklin's youth movement, could see so clearly, exactly the way we see it today, what was going on when Thucydides wrote the Peloponnesian Wars. And what really struck me is the section in there with the island of Melos, where the new Athenian dictatorship in the works goes to the people of the island of Melos and says, you were neutral before, that's not allowed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to be neutral. We don't have a category called neutral. You're either for us or against us.
So they had the old Texan saying way back then, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I think, look, this is an important point, and again, I don't know how often we can bring this up, but it's the EIR, the Executive Intelligence Review, is the manual for being a citizen. And if you're reading anything else, if you're wasting time on a daily newspaper, unless you have a dog you're toilet training or you have a bird cage, and I used to have canaries, and I was very careful about what newspapers I'd stick in the canary cage because I didn't want them to get destroyed by the mainstream media. But if you're reading anything, it should be the EIR. You can call us and get a subscription, and you should get your friends subscribing also so you can have something to talk about. I mean, I don't know how long people can talk about the American Idol, but if you want to talk about things intelligently with your friends, give us a call to get the EIR, 888-347-3258, and tell them you heard about it on the LaRouche Show. Now, what I'd like to do, Michelle, is open the lines to our panelists to have kind of a roundtable discussion. If they have any questions for you or anything else they'd like to add, why don't we go back to Tim in Washington. Tim, you got anything?
Yeah, in regards to the Rayburn Building, which has been quite busy this past week. We're in it routinely when we're organizing for Congress. Last Saturday or Sunday, it was home to a raid by the FBI into Jefferson's office.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, great. You know, this is something the Republicans will use to point their fingers and change the subject. And remarkably, that didn't happen. And, in fact, you had coming from Hastert a defense. And the Republicans as a whole have been largely silent on the issue of this supposed bribery scandal. I was wondering if you knew of anything that's going on behind the scenes that would warrant that.
Yeah, Michelle, this is actually very interesting that this is brought up because you had the strange sight of Hastert and Pelosi joining in denouncing the FBI raid against the congressional office, which I think was the first time it happened. What do you have on this?
Well, this Tim, you're absolutely right. This is this could be a turning point in the whole situation in Washington. So just for listeners who may not be aware of the full story, Jefferson is a Democratic congressman from Louisiana. He's under investigation, and for the first time in the history of this republic since the Constitution was ratified, police, federal police, in this case the FBI, went in to his congressional offices and seized everything. Now, there was such shock that for a couple of moments or a day or so, some of the Democrats actually were stunned and didn't want to, quote-unquote, call attention to it. This is the problem that that Kurt and others referenced about the Democratic Party. Are you going to be a fighting force, or are you going to delude yourself that you can just wait for the Republicans to screw up? So they didn't say too much about it. But we have since been told that the FBI, which is a branch of the executive, it's a branch of the White House, and we got three, you know, sections of our government, legislative, executive, and judiciary, and they're supposed to be checks and balances. So when you have the executive going into the United States Congress under the pretense of it could be anything, anonymous informants, et cetera, taking everything out of an office, you lose your ability to have a sovereign lawmaking process. So, yes, Hastert, the Republican head of the House of Representatives, and Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader, held a joint press conference to denounce this. The heat is so extreme that George W. Bush actually forced the FBI and the Justice Department to put all of those files into a safe where no one could read them while he takes 45 days to try and figure out what the heck is he going to do with this mess on his hands.
Now, so, according to the reports this morning, Alberto Gonzalez said if Bush returns these documents, he will resign. The Attorney General would resign.
Hallelujah. I think it's all disinformation. Yeah, the Washington Post says Gonzalez insists that we have a right to these documents, and Dick Cheney and Addington, his legal hitman, were opposed to the raid. I don't believe that for 1 minute.
But this does bring up the question of an administration, an executive branch, which asserts its right to do whatever it pleases, the old Führerprinzip, the Führer, the leadership principle. This is a way that you can intimidate a Congress, which is not exactly going along with the administration.
These days, that's right. They're revolting. And the word we got from people close to Capitol Hill is that 20 offices have been targeted for this, probably in both parties, to shut up the critics, to stop the kind of investigations. Remember, at the end of last year, you had the bucking of Cheney on the torture issue. You had John Murtha on the withdrawal from Iraq and so forth. So this could be, when I said it could be the turning point, this could actually bring the Democratic Party and the other congressional people into reality, and they're going to fight for the country, not just this crazy state of affairs that we've been in since, as Dick Cheney would say, 911, 911, 911. People are not buying it anymore. So the moment's ours.
And that's why there's this danger that there would be a new terrorist incident to give them a new impetus or excuse.
A pretext,
for further
exactly.
crackdown, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, Kurt, you have anything more to any reports or questions you have?
Yes, I have a question for Michelle. The recent court filings that Patrick Fitzgerald has made really clearly indicate Cheney as being the architect behind the leaking of Valerie Plame's identity and also behind the disinformation campaign against Joseph Wilson. I was wondering if we have any indications of how imminent a charge might be drawn up against Cheney by Fitzgerald's office.
That is very hard to say. We have gotten a lot of reports that it won't be until after the midterm elections. Lyndon LaRouche is saying he's got to go now because this Iraq war danger is now. And as long as he stays in, we are really in jeopardy of having a new war launched on the basis of such incidents. So we don't have anything reliable. There's been a big flap in Washington. We don't like to make predictions. What Mr. LaRouche is saying is we know it needs to be done. Dick Cheney's criminality is not just around the Valerie Plame leak, but around the whole orchestration of a war that did not have to take place. Congress was lied to, et cetera. So our perspective is let's get the impeachment rolling against Cheney. Leave the Bush issue for another time. We've got the book of evidence on Cheney.
Yeah, this is especially important now because Cheney would also tend to be the one of the leading thugs to try to stop a bipartisan move for this emergency auto legislation.
Yeah. I had a question for, if I could, for one of the youth if they want to comment.
Sure.
Recently we got information about different plants that have been closed down, auto plants being auctioned off. I wanted to know if anyone has gotten a reaction to that information in the organizing of Democrats or unionists or congressmen and their staffs.
Okay, Michelle Fuchs, you got anything on that?
Well, it certainly changes people's reaction in terms of the speed at which one would need to deal with the collapse of industry. I'm not sure of the union responses that we've gotten from that, but definitely in the field, people seem a little alarmed. I don't know, has anything come out at the other locals?
Well, I mean, if you look at the average age of a staffer in these congressional offices, they're either our age or slightly older, so they grew up just as email and the internet was blossoming. So the idea of auctioning, I guess they relate more to the idea of eBay than the auctioning of auctioning off of a machine tool on eBay.
I mean, they'd be upset if eBay were being auctioned off on eBay.
Yeah. So I would say that we had a deployment yesterday with a large trifold display of the machine tool principle, the Dalian paradox, and political leadership, and a lot of honest curiosity to the idea of machine tools. And it's really healthy for the minds of these people to actually work through with some specifics to describe what a machine tool does for them to fully appreciate it. Because, I mean, you know, to be honest, how often have lawyers ever shaped a piece of metal? So,
Kurt, you were just at an event. I think you were at the NASA event.
Yes.
Did you get response from the NASA engineers and supporters on this question of the shutting down of the auto industry?
Well, that was something that we brought up during the event because there was discussion of adequately funding the space program, reviving some of that capacity. But we really brought up this question of you're not going to be able to do that if you lose your machine tool capacity centered in General Motors. So that was an important element that we injected into the conversation because these guys may want to have a good space program, you know, have a real intention to explore other parts of the solar system. But you're not going to be able to do that if you don't have that machine tool capacity. So, yeah, that was kind of the response we got from that event.
Well, they should know better than anyone that it was a plant in Louisiana that they produced the rockets for the Saturn, or the engines for the Saturn rockets.
Right, the Chrysler plant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you, Michelle, when I got a report from Leesburg that a plant in Irvine, California, was being sold off at an auction, I tried to encourage some of the LaRouche Youth Movement members in our office in Los Angeles to place a bid because maybe we could use a stamping press. You know, you never know when it might come in handy. And, you know, maybe we could build our own rocket program. But they're selling them for scrap. They're tearing them apart.
Yeah, and look, there's one little fact that I always use in organizing. That's just outrageous. All this unused capacity. Okay, we don't need more SUVs to be built and so forth. But do you realize that this nation, which was the origin of the Transcontinental Railroad, we're the people who, in the Lincoln administration after the Civil War, collaborating with Russia to teach them how to build the Trans-Siberian Railroad, we do not produce any locomotives. When we have to buy a new train, the United States has to buy from Spain or Canada or France. That's what the issue of machine tools is. We do not have that capacity to build our own transportation system.
Well, that certainly makes the point. Listen, we've got a little less than 5 minutes. Before we do a summary, I'd like to quickly ask the three LIM panelists if you've gotten some response in the last days on the nuclear energy versus ethanol hoax.
In Seattle, what we've noticed is a very, very small amount of the population is really raving about ethanol. I actually had one woman from New Zealand bring up to me when I was discussing with her our action in the political situation, by the way, did you hear about this ethanol thing? It's completely ridiculous. And we're just finding that it's not something that we really have to battle as much as you might think, especially in the Northwest area.
So there's not a large group of people out in the streets demanding sugar cane and corn be grown and take up more energy to produce it than it produces?
Some are. Yeah, and that's what I was mentioning earlier with a group that's here working on the nuclear project, looking at figuring out how to communicate the difference between an energy density that you get from something like nuclear power versus what you would get from ethanol. To better, when you can cite statistics to communicate to someone, oh, ethanol isn't that great because it, you know, it takes 1,200 gallons of water to do this. Or, you know, but you can sway statistics either way. So what's more important is to be able to communicate to people the principle between the difference between using something like ethanol, and especially if you look at nuclear and the effect that it has when you have to reindustrialize your economy to go nuclear.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if people are not yet up to snuff on this again, you can call the number, our toll-free number, and get an EIR where we're covering this with the best coverage you'll get anywhere, 888-347-3258. Now, Michelle, just to summarize what we started with, what are we doing and what can listeners do to stop Dick Cheney from striking again?
Well, go to the LaRouche PAC website and download or print out LaRouche's emergency warning about the Cheney's plan for launching an Iran strike, and just organize like crazy to stop this. Look, the best thing I can say is, since there's no real reason for a war, stopping it is political. Just for Cheney and company, starting it is a political issue. The sooner we organize a mass rejection and a move to dump this crowd out forever, the safer we will be. And I think it will work, because you've already got the military against it. You've got a huge section of the intelligence community. You've got the Congress who is not buying it. So I think the population has got to turn that into action.
So the great sleeping power in the country turns out to be the American people, the American citizens.
Well, and their representatives. So if the American citizens move on this thing, and by the way, over the Memorial Day recess, keep your eyes out and find out your congressmen, your Democratic congressmen and candidates are supposed to have town meetings. That's party orders. We haven't found too many of them, but go to those meetings, distribute this literature, raise these issues, and we can stop this from happening.
Okay, so you just got your marching orders from Michelle Steinberg. We've been talking today about the danger of a terror threat being orchestrated by the network above Cheney. We should make the point, Cheney is a thug. He's not the mastermind of this. But people like Schultz and Rowetten, people that we've covered in our publications, so we can move to stop that. And at the same time, in the next literally 6 weeks, turn the country around. Don't forget, June 9th, Lyndon LaRouche will be giving another in the series of webcasts, this one June 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Tell your friends, get it in your local newspaper. mobilize your people at church, at work. Let's use this opportunity of this next month in the Congress to turn things around. Michelle Steinberg, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Michelle Fuchs, Tim Vance, and Kurt Beil, thank you for joining us, and we'll be with you next week.